Welcome back to the Tanakh Study Center series on Avim Rishonim. Today we continue our study of Melachim Aleph. We'll be studying today chapters 10 through 13, Prakim, Yud through Yud Gimel, and the famous story of Pilug HaMamlacha, the split in the kingdom that began after the reign of Shlomo and will continue until the destruction of the northern kingdom and the 10 tribes several hundred years later. This is also going to be a very major event in Sefer Melachim, because Sefer Melachim is going to follow both kingdoms, both the northern kingdom and as well as the kings of Yehuda. It'll be bouncing back and forth from this point on, following the stories of both kingdoms. Sometimes the kingdoms get along, sometimes the kingdoms are fighting, and there'll be civil war between them. This will be a major topic set for Melachim. The goal of today's share is to understand what led to the break in that kingdom. We're going to see both a political reason and a religious reason. I'd like to begin with the political reason, and only later we'll discuss the religious reason. Because as many times we find in Tanakh, you can explain all the events happening for a very logical, political, normal reason. And we can also see the hand of God behind these events. And it will be the job of the Navi to identify the hand of God behind the events, specifically in cases where without the guidance of the Navi, you could give a very other logical explanation to see why the events took place. We're going to see the logical or so-called political reason for the split in the kingdom. And then we'll see the connection between the political reason and the spiritual or religious reason for the events that unfold. First of all, who is Yerovam? We're going to begin our shir by taking a quick glance at three psukim, which form their own parshiyah in chapter 11, in Perikid Allah Pasach Havav, verse 26 in chapter 11, that describe and introduce who is Yerovam. And the three psukim are not exactly in chronological order. We're going to read them, though, as the Tanakh presents them, and then put them in proper order. We're told as follows. Yerovam ben Nevat Efrati minat Tzrida. Yerovam ben Nevat, from the tribe of Ephraim, from the city of Tzreda, and he was an Eved Shlomo. Doesn't mean he was a servant, a private servant or a slave of Shlomo, but rather he was a worker for Shlomo, Vayarem Yad B'melech, and he revolted against the king. Now, that's the opening line, which is the main point about Yerovam, that he's going to begin a revolt against the king, and now we're going to get the background of what caused that revolt. V'zeh HaDavar Asher Harim Yad B'melech, this is what he did. When did this begin? Shlomo Banat Tamilo, Shlomo built the area called the Milo, Sagar Peretz Ir David Aviv. He closed up the opening of the city of David, of his father. And now, in the last Pasuk, we get some background to who this Yerovam was. And Pasuk Havchet, verse 28, actually took place earlier. And now we're simply filling in the gap. By Ish Yerovam Gibor Chayo, originally Yerovam was a very industrious and strong man. By Yar Shlomo Etanar, Ki Oseh Melachahu, Shlomo saw him when he was young. He was a very industrious worker. He was such a good worker that he put him in charge of all the workers from the house of Yosef. Now, there's a lot of tiny details here. If you put them together, we can begin to see a much wider picture of what's happening. Recall that Shlomo had many building projects. His first building project was the temple itself, was the Beit HaMikdash. That took him some 7 years. Then he built his own house, another some 13 years. And then he began to build a house for the daughter of Paro. And he builds his cities, what's called Ari HaRechev, we learned about. He built cities for his horses and for his chariots and for his army. Shlomo undertook many, many building projects. In the beginning, all the workers were foreign workers, or were workers who Shlomo had taken from the local population that wasn't Jewish. But as the building projects got bigger and bigger, he had to start raising taxes, and then paying taxes was not only paying a financial tax, there was a tax where people were actually taxed themselves. They had to work, pretty much like Miluim today. We can see a story later on where people, 1 month out of every three, had to go up to Lebanon to cut down trees in order to support Shlomo's building projects. We saw the importance of Shlomo's building projects. Shlomo made a great name for his country, but the people began to pay a very heavy price for this growth. And the price was a tremendous burden of work, taxation, both financial taxation, as well as actual physical labor. And one of the people who was in charge of all the physical labor and the servants from the tribe of Yosef was Yerovam himself. As the leader of the workers, almost like the leader of a workers' union, Yerovam began to feel sorry for his workers, and he decides enough is enough. And he blows the whistle on all this extra work, and he begins a workers' revolt against Shlomo and all his building project. And that seems to be what's being described here in chapter 11. To our amazement, this revolt that Yerovam begins is given the support of a Navi, one of God's own prophets. And that we're told about in Pasuk Haftet, Vahi Beitahi, Yerovam Yatzam Yerushalayim. During that time, when Yerovam was planning his revolt, Yerovam was leaving Yerushalayim, A prophet named Achia from the city of Shiloh is meeting Yerovam, and he tells him as follows. He takes Yerovam by his new garment, and he rips it into 12 pieces. He tells Yerovam as follows. You take 10 pieces of this torn garment. This is what God has to say. I'm going to give 10 pieces to you, the 10 tribes, and the 2 tribes, Yehuda, and one additional tribe, which will be Binyamin, will be given to Shlomo for the sake of David and for the sake of Yerushalayim, the city that he chose. And then Achia continues and gives the reason, because Shlomo had led his people into worshiping other gods, the gods of all the nations around. We're going to return and try to understand what had happened to Shlomo in several minutes when we continue that topic in our share. Before we continue, we should also explain why is it that God says for the sake of David and for the sake of Yerushalayim, I have to give Shlomo one additional tribe. Recall that one of Shlomo's biggest building projects was the temple in Yerushalayim. And that was going to be a major site where everyone would gather, bring korbanot, and serve God. And that would be HaMakom HaShivchar Hashem L'Shaken Shmo Sham, the site where God would choose to make his name known, we discussed from Sefer Devarim. If Shlomo only kept Shevet Yehuda and lost Shevet Binyamin as well, then Yerushalayim would become a border city. As a border city, there's no way it could sustain a temple. It would be at war all the time. And therefore, for the sake of Yerushalayim, God promises Shlomo and the kingdom of Yehuda that there'll be one additional tribe, that'll be the tribe of Binyamin, that'll be with him. And that is for the sake of the promise God made to David, that his son would build a house and Yerushalayim would be the place where God's Shekhinah would dwell. We'll read this in Pasuk Lamed Daled. V'lo akach et kol hamamlacha miyado. In verse 34, God tells Yerovam through the Navi Achia, I'm not going to take the entire kingdom from him. For leman David avdi, asher bachati oto, for the sake of David, God's servant, who God had chosen, asher shama mitzvotai v'chuktai, he kept my laws. V'lachachti hamlucha miyad beno, I'm going to take the kingdom away from Shlomo's son. V'tanti alacha et aseret hashvatim, I'm going to give you 10 tribes. V'livno etein shevet achad, to a son, I'm going to give one additional tribe. Leman near the David Abdi Kohiamim Difanai Yerushalayim. So there should be some remnant for David in front of me in Yerushalayim. Ha'ira Shabakhati Li Lasum Shmisham. The city that I've chosen to make my name known there, for the sake of Yerushalayim, Yehuda will have 2 tribes, so that Yerushalayim would not become a border city. And then Yerovam is allowed to become king and extend his kingdom as much as he wants to the other 10 tribes. Of course, this promise to Yerovam is also conditional, as was God's choice of David and Shlomo earlier. Pasuk Lamed Chet, Vayayim Tishmat Ashkol Asher Tzadaka, on the condition, if you follow everything I command you, V'halachta B'drachai, you follow my ways, V'asite Yashar B'inai, Lishmor Chukotai V'mitzvotai Kasher Asad David Avi, if you, Yerovam, follow my ways, do which is straight in my eyes, and follow all my laws, then V'ayiti Imach, I'll be with you, God says, and I'll build for you a house, as I built for David, and I'll give you the rest of Israel. And that's the promise that Achia, the prophet, makes to Yerovam. Shlomo hears about this revolt, and Shlomo wants to kill Yerovam. Yerovam runs away to Egypt. He's going to find an ally in Egypt, as we'll see later on. And that's the so-called the prophetic background to what's happening. Meaning, we have a political reason for this revolt. The unrest among the people, because of the high taxation, there's a very logical political reason why the people are rebelling against Shlomo. And as well, we're going to find much more detail, however, for the religious reason, this is going to come as a punishment to Shlomo for his worship of other gods. What doesn't make sense, though, why would Shlomo be worshipping other gods? In the first 10 chapters of Sefer Melachim, he was doing so well. The country was growing. He was making a name for God. Other nations were coming to visit. He was praying that God should listen to the prayers of other nations. What went wrong with his great plans? What we'd like to suggest in our share is there's a connection between the political reason and the religious reason. And what happened? In our last year, we explained the positive side of marrying wives from other nations. We talked about that they served in many ways as an embassy or an ambassador of another nation, and solidifying a political treaty between two nations was accomplished by the king marrying the daughter of a neighboring king. And it wasn't a wife in the sense of having someone to bring up a family and children, but rather a political alliance which was formalized by marriage of the daughter of a foreign king. Now, because all these foreign embassies or all these foreign wives were in Yerushalayim, Shlomo had to build houses or embassies for all of his wives. But what happened in those embassies? The whole purpose that Shlomo did this was in order that they should come and visit and see the Jewish people and be impressed by the Jewish people and come visit the temple and the Beit HaMikdash, as we saw with the visit of the Queen of Sheba. That's when things are going well. But what seems to have happened, the success came a little bit too quick, and it was going so well that Shlomo began to expand a little bit too fast. And instead of the Jewish people having an effect on all the people coming to visit, they were so overwhelmed with the amount of visitors coming, and the amount of business, and the amount of prosperity that was coming into the country. There was so much foreign influence coming in that the people coming in had more influence than the Jewish people had on them. For example, someone from Egypt would be coming. They would go to the house of, or the embassy, of Bat Paro, and there they would find all the Egyptian culture they need. But once it's open for foreign visitors, the local people as well would come and follow. And despite his good intentions, this growth, which was way too fast and way too expansive, began to backfire. There was too much foreign influence and other culture coming on the Jewish people. They began asking questions, who are these other gods? What are the customs of these nations? That's why Chazal say that even though Shlomo himself didn't worship all these other gods, the Navi, the Pasuk that the Navi writes, treats Shlomo as though he worshipped other gods. We're going to read those Pasukim very soon. Not because he actually worshipped them, but he allowed it to happen. And because he's at the top of the pyramid, it's his responsibility for what's happening, the Navi treats them as though he actually worshipped other gods. We're going to read now in Perek Yud Aleph how the Navi is very critical of what Shlomo does. And we're going to claim as follows, that the work of Achiah the Navi, Achiah Shiloni, his prophecies begin in chapter 11. Because we're going to see a very sharp shift in tone between chapter 10 and chapter 11. In chapter 11 and onwards, there's not one good word about Shlomo. Shlomo is portrayed in a very negative light. Whereas to the end of chapter 10, he's portrayed in a very positive light. We're going to attribute this change to the change in Navi. Because Achiah has to come to explain, why was it that God allowed Yerovam to begin his revolt? And what was the reason for the revolt? It begins with Shlomo marrying too many foreign wives. That will explain in the beginning of Perek Yud Aleph. The positive side we saw in the works of Natan, they continued to chapter 10. But from chapter 11 on, we're going to see the works of the Navi Achiah. Later we're going to appreciate how the Navi Yirmiyahu, when he put together Sefer Melachim, how and where he combines these two nevot of these different Navim and delivers a very beautiful message of what caused Shlomo to make this mistake. Let's look at the beginning of this unit in chapter 11 and take a quick peek at how the Navi attacks Shlomo for what he did. Recall in chapter 3, back in Perek Gimel, when Natan was describing how Shlomo married Paro, or he entered an agreement with Paro and took his daughter, the daughter of Paro, that was viewed in a very positive light. There was nothing negative there at all. Now we're going to take the exact same event and look at it from a very different perspective. Perek Yud Aleph, Pasuk Aleph. V'melech Shlomo ahav nashim nochriot rabot bet bat Paro. Shlomo loved many other wives, many foreign wives, including the daughter of Paro, and also Moabites, women from Ammon, from Edom, from Sidon, that's in Lebanon. Minagoyim asher amar Hashem el bnei Yisrael lo tovo behem, from the nations, the God told bnei Yisrael not to intermarry with them, and you shouldn't marry them, they shouldn't marry you, because they're going to take your heart away from God. Behem devak Shlomo lahava. Specifically, those wives Shlomo clung to love them. Then he has some almost 1,000 wives. Probably this is a bit of an exaggeration, but we'll see the Navi is allowed to exaggerate to make his point. And then Vayi Leitzik not Shlomo, towards the later years of Shlomo's life, when he was getting old, his wives turned his heart away from God, and his heart was not complete with God, as was the heart with David. And then we hear about all the different gods that Shlomo followed. After describing all the different idols that Shlomo worshipped, or Shlomo had set up, if you take a look in verse 8 in Pasuk Chet, V'chein asa l'chol nashav anochriot, Shlomo built these idols, not because he believed in them, but in order to placate his wives, who are basically ambassadors from these different countries, in order to keep Jerusalem open for foreign travel, he had to give in to their needs. They have cultural needs. They're not going to become Jewish overnight. They're not going to become monotheists right away. We want them to visit. But what's going to happen is, if we want them to have embassies, we have to sort of give in to their needs. And he allowed the construction of places of idol worship for all these visitors coming. And therefore, in Pasuk Tet, Vaitanaf Hashem b'Shlomo, God became very angry with Shlomo because his heart turned from God and didn't keep his laws. And therefore, in Pasuk Yed Aleph, Vayom Hashem l'Shlomo, God now rebuked Shlomo through the Navi, Yana Shereita Zot Imach, because you did this and you didn't keep my covenant and my laws, I'm going to take away the kingdom from you and give it to somebody else. I won't do it in your lifetime for the sake of your father David, but I'll take it away in the time of your son. And then chapter 11 continues about all the people who began to give trouble to Shlomo and how towards the end of his kingdom there was a lot of unrest. In essence, what's the Navi saying? The Navi is coming to explain a prophetic reason, or in many ways a spiritual reason, for the collapse of Shlomo's kingdom. It was because he didn't follow God properly, because he followed the ways of his other wives, even though he had very good intentions in marrying them and supporting them and making them homes or houses or embassies in Yerushalayim. Nonetheless, he went too far with it. And therefore, God gets angry, and the outcome of that will be the split in the kingdom. At the same time, it's exactly those building projects, all those houses that he had to build, all these embassies he has to build in Yerushalayim. We'll see exactly what it's talking about when we mentioned earlier with Yerovam. It said, when did the revolt break out? When he built the Milo and closed opening near David. If you look back in chapter 9, we're going to see exactly when he built the Milo. In chapter 9, verse 24, Perek Tet Pasach Avdalad, it says there, Ach Bat Paro Otam Ir David. He took Bat Paro from Ir David, brought her up. El Beita Asher Banala, Az Banat Milo. To the house that he built for her, and that's when he built the Milo. Why is it called the Milo? The most popular explanation of this is Milo from Lashon Lemalei, to fill. As you know, most of you, I'm sure, have been in Yerushalayim. There's Har Abayit, where the Beit HaMikdash is being built, on the Temple Mount. There's the city of David, Ir David today, much lower down. That's where we enter the Kotel from Shar HaShbot, which is right between Ir David and Har Abayit, much lower down. And there used to be a valley, a very steep valley, between Ir David and Har Abayit. And that valley began to become filled up with buildings that Shlomo built. In fact, there's archaeological finds in the southern excavations. One of the earliest finds we have in that valley, at the very bottom of the valley, we find big hewn stones and big structures from the 10th century BCE, which is pretty much the time period of Shlomo. So we even have archaeological evidence of this building project that's taking place in the time of Shlomo. But this building project took tremendous resources from the people. It wasn't just building a house for God and a house and a palace for the king. All these housing projects he's building for all the women, all these embassies that he's taking in, the people are saying enough is enough. There is a direct connection between the religious reason and between the political reason. It was because of this desire to open up Yerushalayim to all this foreign influence. The people, the workers, were overtaxed, overworked, and they rebelled against their taskmaster. We're going to see in the next chapter, when the revolt actually begins, Adoniram, the person in charge of the taxation, he's taxing actually workers, he's taking workers, not just taking their money. There's a workers' revolt against Adoniram. He's coming to collect his workers, and they stone him and they kill him. The political unrest, the social unrest here, is for a very logical reason. Shlomo's working the people too hard. And when Rehavam takes over, he tells his people, I'm going to be much harsher on you than my father was. And he says, my little finger is going to be stronger than my father's whole fist. Rehavam threatens to increase the taxation on the people and make them work even harder. That already gets the people totally angered by Rehavam. That leads to the revolt and the split of the kingdom. So even though we can give a very logical political reason for these events, the Navi wants to see a deeper reason, the reason because Shlomo overdid it with the foreign wives. Now, I want to show you what I think, how the Navi Yirmiyahu expresses the reason for what happened. If you look at chapter 10, we read chapter 10 in our last year. We talked about the visit of Malkat Shva, which is very positive, the highlight of Shlomo's kingdom. After the story of the visit of Malkat Shva, which I think could have been the last story in chapter 10, we have several extra details that could have been brought down earlier. If you look in Perek Yud, in Pasuk Yudalet Yud Zayin, we have verses 14 to 17, we have a story about the mass amounts of Zahav, of gold, that Shlomo had collected. And then we have another Parshia from Pasuk Yud Chet to Chafei, from 18 to 25, about the beautiful ivory throne that Shlomo makes for himself. Then the last Parshia in Perek Yud, from verses 26 to 29, talks about all the horses that Shlomo collected and all the chariots. And then that's the end of chapter 10. And then all of a sudden, in the beginning of chapter 11, we talk about all the Nashim Nechriot that Shlomo married. Now, if you didn't catch on, at the end of chapter 10, we have the story of all the amounts of Zahav, all the Kesef of Zahav that Shlomo amassed. We also have the story of all the Susim, all the horses for his army. But in chapter 10, those are described in a rather positive setting. There's nothing negative there in the description of the Zahav and the Susim, because that's part of the good parakim about Shlomo, together with the visit of Malkat Shva, and everything there is seen in a positive light. But those details, we found them already in chapter 4 and 5. They could have been recorded about all the gold he amassed, and about all the horses, etc. We could have written that earlier. We save that description for here, because we're going to put it next to chapter 11. The first parsha in chapter 11 is about the Nashim Nachriot that Shlomo married, and there they're presented in a very negative light. But if I take these three parshiot, the last two in chapter 10 and the first one in chapter 11, I find the topic of too much zahav, too much gold and silver, too many horses, and too many wives. I'm sure you guessed already, that's exactly Parshat HaMelech. In Parshat HaMelech in Sefer Dvarim, in chapter 17, beginning in Pasuk Yedalad in Sefer Dvarim, we find the commandment to appoint a king. And even though the Jewish people are permitted, maybe even commanded, to appoint a king, the king is limited in what he can do. But the guidelines that the king receives are rather unclear. The Torah tells the king, lo yabelo susim, he can't take too many horses. Lo yabelo kesef azahav, he can't take too much gold and silver. Lo yabelo nashim, he can't take too many wives. But we don't get an exact guideline how many is permitted, how many is not permitted. Chazal say, kedei mektavto, how much do you take? Enough, as much as you need, not as much as you want. What's necessary for the kingdom, for the nation to survive, that's enough. What does Chazal say about Shlomo? He says, ani arbev lo asur, I'll take a little extra and I won't leave God. The Torah tells us, v'lo yasur lavavo, if he takes too much, this will take his heart away. Shlomo thought he would serve himself. He thought, I could do all this growth and everything will be fine. And sure enough, after all these years, towards the end of his life, all these extra riches and all this extra building and all the extra wives turned his heart too much. He was too much into his own growth and the growth of his country and not enough into following God. So what we've seen so far is the revolt, which is instigated by the Navi Achiyah, receives support from God for a very simple reason. The Shlomo is being punished for his behavior as king. He overdid, he overextended himself. He didn't follow Parshat HaMelech properly. The Navi comes to explain that that's the real and the deeper and underlying reason for the revolt that Yeravam began. And again, even though it was a political revolt, the undertones and the underlying reason, the Navi says, is because there was a lacking in this proper attitude to God. Based on what the Navi is telling Yeravam, what type of kingdom was Yeravam supposed to set up? It seems like Yeravam was supposed to be a king, or basically the political leader of Israel. And Shlomo would have kept the temple, and the Jews would have continued to worship God in the Beit HaMikdash in Yerushalayim. But the political leadership, the economic leadership, the military leadership of the country would have been in the hands of Yeravam. We would have a type of a coalition government where the main king would have been Yeravam and Shlomo would have been in a secondary position. Yeravam is not happy with that. And that's the story in chapter 12 where Yeravam decides that if I follow the Navi Achiyah properly, I'm going to lose my kingdom. And if that happens, slowly the people are going to go to Yerushalayim to bring their korbanot in the Beit HaMikdash. They're going to remember their old king Shlomo, how good it was in the good old days. They're going to forget me and they'll leave me. Yeravam institutes a type of religious reform, but for political reasons. Yeravam is going to establish places of worship of God called Bamot in Beit El and Dan. His intention here is to serve the God of Israel, but he serves them in a way that the Navi was not in favor of. And therefore he says to, in his heart, Yeravam Belibo in chapter 12, in Perek Yud Bet Pasach Avav, the kingdom is going to return to the house of David. But if the people go to Yerushalayim, they'll leave me. And therefore, he makes two agalim, two calves, or sounds very much like chet egel, and he makes two places of worship of God. These egels are going to represent God. It could be the Navi's making fun and ridiculing what he's doing. It could be he was making something like Kruvim. He's making some symbol of the God of Israel and saying there's no longer a need to serve God in Yerushalayim. In essence, he's saying the Bamot are now permitted again. Because Yerushalayim is no longer the Benuchal v'Nachala, now we can go back to the way things were in the time of Shmuel and David, where Bamot were permitted. It was permitted to worship God in any high place. And if David is indeed unchosen, and his son is not chosen anymore, therefore Yerushalayim is not chosen. And therefore, it's now permitted to serve God in Bamot. And now the new Bama, one will be in the big Bama, the national Bama, one will be in Beit El, and one will be in Dan. Those are the borders of his kingdom. the southern border is Beit El, the northern border will be done. And he's saying that Gan Shechina is located between these two Mikdashim. In many ways, he's decentralizing the worship of God. There's a concept here. Instead of saying that all of God's Shechina is concentrated in one city, just in Yerushalayim, God's Shechina is in the entire country, from Dan all the way to Beit El. Those are the borders of the northern kingdom. And by putting the Mikdashim, we call the Mikdashei Gvul, Mikdashim, temples at the border, we're saying that God's Shechina, God's dwelling between these two Mikdashim, and everywhere in between, is now a holy place where people can bring korbanot on any high place, in any bama, and God would be happy with that service. That sounds like a very logical and very enticing religious reform that elder people follow. And most of the people agree with this and think they're doing the right thing. But the Navi is telling us that Yerovam was explaining this reform for religious reasons, but the real motivation were political. Saying Yerovam Belibo, his political motivation was he was afraid he would lose his kingdom. What Yerovam is doing, Yerovam is making religious reform, claiming to make religious reform, but doing it for political reasons. That's going to be the sin of Yerovam. God's going to get angry at Yerovam for that. Yerovam is not following what God wanted, and that's going to bring, within a generation or two, the fall of Yerovam's kingdom himself. And now we're going to go into a spiral in Jewish history where both the kingdom up north of Yerovam doesn't follow God, so too the kingdom of Rechavam in Yehuda, and we're going to go into a slump, and which will lead to a big civil war. That'll be the topic of our next year. But in today's year, we saw the background for the split in the kingdom. Chapter 13 talks about an argument between two Nevi'im. One Navi from Beit El supporting Yerovam, and another Navi from Yehuda supporting the Mikdash in Yerushalayim. It's a very difficult story, but if you want to try to understand what's going on in that story, is there's an argument among Nevi'im. What is the proper temple to follow? There's a very good reason not to follow Shlomo in Yerushalayim. There's a very good reason not to follow the son of Shlomo, Rechavam, in Yerushalayim, because they're corrupt, and they've left God. They're not serving God properly. There's also a very good reason why not to worship in the Mikdash started by Yerovam up north. There's also good reasons to stay in both. And now the people aren't so sure who they should follow. There's an argument among religious leaders. There's a Navi Yehuda fighting a Navi in Beit El. And it's this uncertainty and clarity which is going to lead the Jewish people into a very big religious crisis. And that crisis is going to continue up until the time of Eliyahu, as we'll see in the Shurim that will follow.